Call the meeting to order, because I know, I'm just going to confirm, Legislator Roberts, you have a limited timeframe, right? You have about an hour? You're on mute.
I'm sorry, I'd like to be done in an hour if you don't mind.
Okay, so we'll do this, I'm fine with that, and I think we'll do this as a first kind of general pass, and then we'll have to do, another. Some of the issues, I'm sure, are going to take some more detail, a more detailed discussion, and then some are just going to be kind of technical amendments. So I'll call the meeting to order. Jay, do you mind taking attendance?
Absolutely. Chairwoman Bartels.
Here.
Deputy Chair Roberts.
Here.
Legislator Gavaris.
Present.
Legislator Heppner.
Here.
And Legislator Ronk says he should be joining us shortly. You have 4 present, 1 absent.
Okay, great. Now, I am, for the first time, doing this on my iPad, so I can tell you now that I cannot see everybody at once. So if for some reason I don't call on you and your hand is raised, please just unmute yourself and let me know, because it's not that I'm trying to ignore you, it's that that I can't physically see you.
Madam Chair, who can you see?
I can see you. I can see Jonathan, legislators Cahill, Haynes, Litz, and Parity. And then I can see Legislative Council and Tom Cajun.
Chairwoman Bartels, for your information,
and I see
did just admit Ronk.
Okay, I see Ronk now too. So it's going to move a bit who I see, but don't be afraid to speak up. So I think let's start on page 1. And this way I can at least mark down where we're going to be paying more attention. Rule number 1 is the rule of order, not subject to executive approval. Does anyone have any comment on rule 1? Okay, I see none. Rule 2 is amendment.
I have a question, Chairwoman.
Okay.
I just want to know what is the purpose of this meeting, actually?
We're doing, we do this periodically, where we look through the rules of order to make amendments and improvements. We do it as a holistic view, so okay. We're starting that process.
And it's been a while since we've done this?
It has. It has. We've made some minor amendments here and there over the years, but the last major amendment was, Jay, do you know what year that was?
2013?
13, yeah.
Is that right, Kev?
Okay. That's about right. I was going to say 3 or 4 years ago, but.
I think I think Council Guerin actually spearheaded that.
Erica was the.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was at least 5 years ago, maybe 6.
Yeah, so it's been a substantial amount of time. Some of them, Legislator Haynes, some of the changes are going to be technical changes, and some are just things that we've seen over time. And then I also expect that we'll have some spirited conversation about changes based on what we've seen in practice over the years.
Chairwoman Bartels, before you get cooking, I'm about to admit a number I don't know, so if I could just beg a minute of your time to get their
name. Yes.
Good evening, caller from 267, you number move, 221-18572. I botched your number, I'm sorry. Can we get your name for the record?
James Logan.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so moving on, rule number 2, amendment of rules. Okay, I do have a comment on this section, if no one else does, and that is related to, by a majority, if you look at the last portion of the sentence, by a majority vote of the total members of the legislature, and only after having been read at 2 consecutive meetings of the legislature, I'd like to offer the suggestion that we put in the provision that cannot be adopted at an organizational meeting. In other words, it can't have happened over the previous year and then be adopted at an org meeting. Any thoughts? Go ahead, Ken.
Kev, did you have something to say?
I was just wondering why not. If Tracy had a reason why she didn't want to do the org meeting.
You know, I'm thinking, first of all, the suggestion came from our clerk, and I agree. It was something that I don't think I would have caught, but I agree is a good suggestion, given that, you know, our organizational meeting is often a new body. You know, we're dealing with new members. We're, beginning a session. I just think changing rules at that point, probably not the appropriate point to make a rule change. Legislator Ronk?
Thanks. And this might be a question for either Chris or Nick. I'm not sure at that point it would be an amendment to the rules, because prior to the organizational meeting, we don't have any rules. We adopt rules at the organizational meeting. So as far as I know, from a legal perspective, we can adopt any rules we deem fit. And it wouldn't be an amendment to rules because at that point we don't have current rules.
I think you're probably correct. I think the question is, do we want to adopt brand new set of rules at an org meeting?
I don't think that there's an amendment to these rules that would preclude us from doing that. That's my point.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I agree with Legislator Ronk. I actually think legally that is the sound point of reasoning.
Yes, that's a good point. Okay.
As much as I agree with you, and I've never supported changing the previous year's rules at the org meeting, I just don't think that there's a way we can force a new body not to.
Right. It's a kind of a catch 22. No, that's a good, it's a good point. Okay. All right. So we'll move on. Does anyone have any other questions or comments for rule two? Okay.
Do we want to clarify and perhaps not the word read at two consecutive meetings, because previous legislators have suggested that they actually have to be read out loud.
We used to waive the reading.
Only after having been presented for consideration at two consecutive meetings.
Yeah. That's
maybe it's silly, but
no, I don't think it's silly. I'm making a note, and Jay, you're keeping notes as well. There's also the issue, this two consecutive meetings, which will come up later. Technically, my understanding is because we're a charter form of government, we don't even have to have these readings. I think the readings are good because it allows the public the opportunity to hear and participate in the process, but the executive, upon prior to signing the laws,
you're talking about the second public hearing.
Okay, so let's move on. I think that's a good suggestion. Does anyone else have any comments about Legislator Ronk's suggestion in terms of clarifying reading? Okay, so we're going to put that in the note to make the change. Rule number three, resolutions, local laws, rules for procedure and presentation and consideration.
Sorry, Chairwoman. Sorry, I just had a
question. Oh, yes. Go ahead.
So is that a requirement that we wait for two consecutive meetings, or is that just because that has been practiced?
Right now it's a requirement for local laws.
And
it's a requirement for amendments. It's a requirement for amendments to the rules. Two consecutive meetings.
I think John was asking, can we change that from two to one?
We could. I mean, that would be would be a change to the rules. Yeah.
Because I've written a lot of bylaws for different committees and different groups, especially like even our rescue squad. And we have it where you can pass something in one meeting with a 3/4 majority vote. So if you have 3/4 of the membership or the body voting for something, you can pass it in one meeting, otherwise it would require a simple majority in two consecutive meetings.
And what does everyone think about that? Any thoughts?
It's been
legislator Ronk?
I've always supported the two readings rule, mostly because I feel strongly that, you know, amendments to our rules, you know, that's kind of a big, you know, it's kind of a big step. I wouldn't want it to be taken in haste. That's why I've always continued to support the two meeting rule, because it really gives us time to think.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't be necessarily against the idea just offhand of a like a three quarters, you know, majority support, because if something has that much support, it's probably non-controversial. But
right.
In a case where we would need to change the rules in that much haste, we also have the ability to suspend the rules with a two-thirds majority.
Correct.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? So, Jay, can you make a note, and we can highlight this for discussion?
Just so that I get it all ready for you, I think you all remember the extensive and multiple conversations we had around that proposed ethics law. And one of the things that we did to track your conversations were to put notes in as you went along that weren't technically amendments, but they were like your tracking of your thoughts conversation. Would you like me to do that so that you have a more robust working document moving forward, and I can just put them all in? And for example, I would put that it was Legislator Guevara's suggestion, one meeting with three quarters or two meetings with simple majority. And then you can have that document in advance of the next meeting.
Yes, I think that would be great. That would be a big help. I'm joining Jay with a different computer because it's hard for me to do this without seeing everybody. Okay, so moving on.
Get him, you want him, Chris.
Hold on, I gotta get out of this other meeting. There we go. Sorry, I had to get out of the other meeting. It was echoing. Okay, so then moving on to Rule 3, Resolutions, Local Laws, Rules for Procedure and Presentation and Consideration. Starting with A, Adoption, Amendment, and Repeal. For those who don't know, the highlighted is charter language, the italicized. So we have that. B is the procedure. And then C, Procedure for Submission and Consideration of Resolutions in Committee. Does anyone have any comments on that portion? Okay. A, regular resolutions. Any comments on regular resolutions? Okay, I have a couple of technical comments. Starting with the first sentence, resolutions shall be deemed regular resolutions if they are filed. If they are filed with the clerk of the legislature by resolution deadline, we could insert by resolution deadline, not later than 12 noon. And then I think just for housekeeping, we can strike the last portion of the last sentence, or in the case of 2013, as soon as practicable.
I have no objection to those two changes.
Okay. Legislative Council?
Just quickly, because maybe I'm looking at a draft that's not correct, but it says resolutions shall be deemed regular resolutions if they are with the clerk of the legislature filed by resolution deadline. Wouldn't it make more sense if it says if they are filed with the clerk by resolution deadline, not later than 12 noon? Move that filed. I think that
yeah.
The Scrivener's error there.
I agree. And for the rest of that section, I don't have any comments. Does anyone else have any in A? Okay, so moving on to B, late filed resolutions. any general comments on the whole section of this is, I mean, this is a detailed section. Does anyone have any thoughts on late filed resolutions? Okay, so I have a technical, another technical one. That's an I. The resolution was introduced upon the request of the county executive, comptroller, sheriff, district attorney, or county clerk, which shall be specifically identified as being introduced at the request. The resolution, if meeting this criteria, shall contain a written explanation. So we're just requiring that it be written, not just it be an explanation. Yes, Legislator Ronk.
Thanks. Sorry, I'm looking for it. Just give me 1 second. I remember.
I can't hear you, Legislator Ronk. I don't know if you have a technical difficulty.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, that's that good spectrum internet. So there was a case this year where a resolution may have met two criterion, but the chair of laws and rules did not want to put it on the agenda, and therefore it was not put on the agenda. I'm trying to find the specific passage, but you know, the question I had was all the other committees, it says it shall be placed on the agenda. I think for laws and rules, it, you know, if the other committee had met, it may be placed on the agenda. I'm trying to find it. I can't find it.
On the top of page 3, a late filed resolution shall be referred to and may be placed on an agenda.
Yeah. I feel like if we're going to have a shall be placed on the agenda for the committee of original jurisdiction, we should also have a shall be placed on the agenda for laws and rules. So far as, you know, there already being two criterion met by the late resolution.
I actually think I directed you to the wrong one because it may be placed on agenda of the committee of original jurisdiction. So let's find where you're talking
about. Maybe, because a late filed resolution shall be referred to and may be placed on the, okay, may be placed. I think we should have a shall be there. I think that if we're going to have two criterion for late resolutions, then there should be a shall be placed on the agenda there.
But
I'd like to offer that for discussion.
Can I just clarify? Because I think I directed you in the wrong manner.
Okay.
That may is referring to placing it on the committee of original jurisdiction if there's still time, if they haven't met yet. So we have to find where the may that you're talking about is.
Yeah.
And I think it's not that one. Let me just look for a second.
I think it's right at the end of that paragraph, Tracy, where it says, if the committee of original jurisdiction is already met at the option of the chairperson of the appropriate committee, if any of the two circumstances exist.
Okay.
I just wanted to offer that for consideration, that perhaps we would like it to, you know, be like a regular resolution, which a chair doesn't have the authority to place on his or her agenda or not. You know.
Okay. Then so that shall would mean that it shall be placed on the committee of original jurisdiction, or it shall be placed on the agenda of laws and rules, depending on the timing.
Correct. And it says if any two of the following circumstances exist.
And you would have to remove the sentence at the option of the chairperson of
Correct.
The appropriate committee, which actually Correct. it applies to all the committees. It's just it's the late filed resolutions in this case fall under the option of the chairperson of the appropriate committee at this.
Right. We used to have all late filed resolutions go to laws and rules. Several yeah. years ago, we changed it to be that if the late resolution was introduced prior to the committee of original jurisdiction meeting, that the Committee of Original Jurisdiction could review the resolution prior to laws and rules.
Yes. Okay. So
we don't have to decide now. I wanted that as a point of discussion.
Okay. Perfect. And then Jay, you got the written explanation as well. Okay. Any other comments in late resolution section? Okay. I have another technical one, actually, that's in the paragraph following the top paragraph of page 4, in such chairperson of laws and rules, blah, 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 for an advisory opinion on such resolution, if that committee has already met, instead of has not met for the legislative calendar month, has already met. That actually came from the clerk, I think, for clarification. So we'll just make a note and we'll put it in so that everyone can see it and we'll consider. I think it's actually correct. It's a technical, but it's a correction. And then in number 2, about halfway down, if the sponsor rejects the amendment, it's probably 2 sentences down in number 2. If the sponsor rejects the amendment, the resolution shall not be advanced and shall be considered a regular resolution, just adding the clarification in unamended form.
Makes sense.
Okay, so moving down page 4, D, consideration by the legislature of resolutions that have passed committee. Any comments?
No.
All right, petition to discharge. Any comments there?
No.
F, procedure for the submission and consideration of local laws, the routing process. Comments?
The technical amendment in subsection 3 seems to make sense. That's what happens anyway.
Yep, the clerk shall generate. Yep. Okay. So that's just for everyone else's edification. On the top of page 6, first paragraph, the first full sentence, within 60 days of receipt of the proposed law or longer, if consented to by the sponsor, unless it has been sent back to the originating committee, the clerk shall generate a resolution. Laws and rules in practice, we haven't been generating the resolutions. Okay, 4, 5.
Can I just pause for 1 second, Legislative Patel? Yeah. I just point a note, I just got caught up a little bit behind reading. Kind of to that point, you know, that the clerk does it anyway, something I feel like we should, just for consideration update, is just going back to E for petition to discharge. Mm-hmm. Subsection A, a document on a form must be filed. I think, you know, just for clarification, because of how we traditionally do it, is that we should also add language, yes, that can still be a possibility, but that the clerk of the legislature may also collect signatures digitally, you know, via email, because I think that's how we've done every petition to discharge in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's an excellent catch.
It says, but at least 75% of the total legislators make up the minority caucus shall have signed such petition, blah, blah, blah. Such signature may be an actual signature on the petition to be held in the custody of the clerk, or a written request to the clerk, hand-delivered, mailed, emailed, or faxed, and in any event received by the clerk within 30 days of such petition being filed.
Okay, sorry, I didn't get to section B. I just got caught up.
Of course, I just want to make sure it's there. I remember it being there because I remember we went through this the last time.
Yeah. I think we can also make the clarification in the spot that you point out, Jonathan, because that has to do with the petition itself, which is very often created and distributed digitally. So just a technical. Okay, so we have to have a closer look at the second paragraph of number 5 on page 6. Substantive changes made by the Laws and Rules Committee, I'm just going to paraphrase, or shall require another public hearing, which shall be set by the legislature via resolution, Nothing shall preclude the calling of a special meeting, et cetera, et cetera. So the question, and this is something we should flag for discussion, is whether or not we want to continue to have the second public hearing. In some cases, we've done third public hearings. Legislator Ronk.
Thanks. I tend to agree with eliminating this section, predominantly because as a charter form of government, we're not even required to have the first public hearing, and we do anyway, because under charter forms of government, for those who don't know, the county executive is required to have a public hearing, the legislature is not.
Okay. So, Legislator Heppner?
Yeah, I just want to say I totally agree. I think it's very often unnecessary.
Yeah, and it's sometimes a, you know, it's substantive, but not substantial. I mean, it's not a substantial difference. It's a substantive difference, but not a substantial. And I know in talking to the clerk, there have been times where we've had three public hearings prior to the executive's public
hearing. And I also think it hinders our ability, like, oh, it's, you know, number one task is, you know, the nuts and bolts of what comes before us. And it can often hinder the willingness of a sponsor to want to make needed changes or even multiple supporters just because they don't want to hold something up or have another public hearing. I think it kind of hamstrings us a little bit to actually do our function.
You know, that's an excellent point. Okay, so we'll flag that for removal as a possibility.
And Chairwoman Bartels, if I... There's a note on my copy, section F, subsection 3, that was a conversation request regarding the term substantive.
Yes. Did anyone want to talk about the term substantive?
I mean, to me, it's got a legal definition.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I felt too. I mean, I saw the flagged point, but I didn't want to. I feel like we'd be open to be overly prescriptive in defining who is defining substantive, I think would create a different level of problems. And so far it seems to have served us fine. I mean, while we may have argued over individual issues, we've gotten through it on the substantive and non-substantive point. So is everyone okay with leaving that as is? All right, so number 6, technical change. I don't even have to read all these out. I can just provide them later. But last sentence, the track changes format shall show new language as underlined or bolded. Number 7, I don't have any comments.
No.
And then a technical fix on G is instead of rules of procedure, they're the rules of order. Just updating that correctly. And then H, jump in if anyone wants to stop me. And I, divisibility of resolutions. Okay.
Nope.
J, general provisions regarding resolutions. Okay, I do have one technical change in 3 at the request of the clerk. That's sequential number of resolutions for each, the last sentence for each, instead of each amendment, for each amended version. The letter shall change. Okay. Okay, rule 4, confirmation of appointments, is primarily charter language. Okay. And rule 5, standing in special committees of the legislature and calendaring of the legislative sessions. Okay, in section D, again, we have the language specific to the changes we made in 13. So I would propose striking that since we're now well beyond it. And then also we will go through, there's an instance here actually that has a her designee, but we'll go through and we'll make sure that everything is either gender neutral or contains both. So that would be his, her. E and F, G, making appointments to standing committees, and H. Okay. Rule 6, chairperson ex officio member of all legislative committees. Any comments here?
Other than what's presented?
Yeah, well, I don't think that was circulated to everyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chair Martels, I have a question.
Yes.
Going back to section F. So to me, there's like a gap here. Every legislator shall serve on at least one standing committee of the Ellis County Legislature. And then the next one says no legislator shall be required to serve on more than three standing committees of the legislature. What happens if you don't want to serve on two and three?
I don't know. You know, this was changed to add the requirement to serve on at least one, because we did have a member years ago who didn't want to serve, who refused to serve on any committee. Legislator Ronk?
Yeah, I was just going to give, you know, a little bit more context back then. I believe that, you know, Chairman Parity was chair of the legislature at that point, and there was some objection by members of one caucus to the manner by which he was elected chair, and there was a mass refusal of committee chairmanships and committees at that point. And there was one particular legislator who refused to serve on any of the committees he was appointed to. So we had, you know, as a legislature made this change, so everyone was required to serve on at least one committee unless given a health reason or other reason to be excused, which is the next subsection. And then there was an argument made, if memory serves, that, you know, a legislator could be required to serve on five committees by a chair, and that was too much work, so that, you know, that's where the, you know, the three committees came from. In theory, under this rule, yeah, you could be required to serve on two or three committees, you know, without violating the rules. Of course, no legislator has to go to the committee meetings. You would just be marked absent.
But my point is that you're requiring minimum one, which I completely agree with, and I think it actually should be two, but putting that aside, you're saying that you can't be required to serve more than three. Does that mean you're required to do two since the minimum is one? Well, I mean, there's a gap here.
You're only required to do two if you're appointed to two.
Again, these issues have been few and far between. On a regular basis, you know, the majority or minority leader would work with the chairperson of the legislature to ensure that legislators were not serving on more committees than they desired to. And I don't know that other than that one instance, we've ever had a problem with any of this.
There was one instance prior in my previous term.
But again, why have the one? If you can't be required, you're required up till three, because you can't be required beyond that, then your minimum requirement could be three.
Because
if you're placed on them, your requirement is minimum is three then.
But that would require that you be placed on three. If it said that you're required to serve on three, you'd be required on three.
Yes, but then there needs to be a language that you require to be on the committees that you're assigned to up to three. There's a gap in this. I'm just thinking because I'm familiar with what Legislator Ronk is speaking about. I remember that history. And I know the instance where people have had, you know, issues and they've done things. I think if there's an opportunity in the future for somebody to do it, somebody's going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's technically correct. I mean, traditionally, you know, in my experience, you're begging someone to serve on the third committee. But, you know, technically, it is really up to three that you would be legally required under the rules.
Right.
I guess I'm struggling to understand. I understand that you can be required to serve on up to three, but the intention of the rules is that you can only be required to serve between one and three. The one committee rule was in order to make sure that no legislator could deny appointment to all of the committees they've been appointed to. That they have to remain on at least one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, are we comfortable with legislators being able to deny, reject appointments to 2 and 3?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the intention, is to allow...
Yeah, I get what you're saying now.
I feel like that's still the intention, to allow for a little latitude, because... But I think it's also, functionally speaking, it's been a very rare problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of, the language is a little bit different than what's traditionally been the realities of how the committees get parsed out. But
I feel like technically,
I totally see this point.
I feel like Legislator Guevaras is, you know, definitely, I mean, I don't feel like he's right. He's definitely right. I feel like maybe, you know, the no more than three is unnecessary at that point then.
That's my point. I always think of what somebody in the future is going to try to do or think about doing. And if the language allows for it, it's just great. I don't see the need for the three part. If you're minimum of one, then you don't have to take any more assignments. Maybe you put something in there they can be assigned to no more than. That's something to consider potentially. They can't be on more than three committees. But the mandatory amount is up to three.
Yeah. And also, like, I don't know if it even is necessary. I mean, the reality is, what is the likelihood of a chair actually mandating every member serve three? You know what I mean? Otherwise, they're not going to be chair very long.
I mean, I'll tell you this. When I was majority leader back in 2011, 12, anyway, we had a caucus with several members who only wanted to serve on one committee. And as leader, I took it on myself to fill unwanted committee seats. I served on five committees 1 year. It was unpleasant. But I feel like banning people from serving on more than three. I feel like if we just say every legislator must serve on at least one committee, and that does the job, and we just remove the, you know, the three, and then that eliminates the problem.
I agree.
And that's what I'm fine with. I was just saying the only discussion, the argument you could have would be that you limit the number, but I'm agreeing. But somebody could go rogue, Ken, and all of a sudden start saying they're going to get back at the minority party, and they're going to assign them to three committees.
Yep.
You know, anything could happen. I always look at it.
I think that the thing is, and I think I see it, what you're seeing, Legislator Guevaras. I think the thing that we were trying to prevent in practice is a chair assigning, to Ken's point, five committees as a kind of punishment and requiring that they serve. And even if you didn't go, then you just would have a record of absence.
But now you can refuse, though, as we've
said.
That's
what John's point is, you can refuse.
Yeah.
As long as you don't refuse all of the committees.
Correct.
Right. All right, let's... But if everyone refused and only served one, we'd have a hard time. So...
Yeah,
and that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's one isn't the minimum number. I'm just saying to have that, if you're going to put a minimum of one, then you can't have also minimum of three.
Right.
You got to have one or the other.
Right, you're saying you could delete the minimum, and you could say that you no legislator shall be required to serve on more than three standing committees.
No. All legislators are required to serve on at least one committee, and just leave it at that.
Or you say minimum of two committees. I'm just saying, but you can't have the third part. The three committees max doesn't work if you're going to have a minimum of one and two.
All right.
Legislator lets keep all that one finger, so I'm assuming he agrees with one.
I agree with one minimum. Some people should only sit on one committee and not one.
Do you want to be the one who decides that, Herbie?
All right. We'll flag it and we'll move on. Okay, so now G, making appointments to standing committees. Get assigned, blah, blah, blah. H, I think we went through G already. H, any comments? Okay, so we were at six. Chairperson, ex officio member. There's a technical change. The chairperson shall be a member ex officio of all legislative committees with a vote thereon. The suggestion was certain voting rights therein. I don't know about the difference. Does
this
anyone
is not have a technical change, Chairwoman Bartels. I apologize for
no, no, if the whole if we were to adopt the whole thing, I mean this if we were to adopt the whole thing, but this I thought was this was an internal note. I realize that Legislator Ronk has it as well. I don't know, was this circulated
to the have it too. I think
I sent it to the members like 10 minutes before the meeting because many of them had asked for it, but just your members have it.
Okay. So I don't agree with this in its current form.
I don't agree with it either. Can I?
Yes.
You heard on it?
Well, Legislator Heppner had his hand first.
No, I wanted to be muted again. So Legislator Rock can go ahead.
All right. I don't feel... One of the whole points of this, this change was made, and I think Legislator Cahill might remember this as well, when Dave Donaldson was chair the first time, but it was in 2008. It was my first year in the legislature, and there were some issues with attendance at committee meetings and lack of quorum. And this eliminates the chair, you know, serving as an ex officio, addressing quorum problems because, you know, votes needed to pass a certain item would be increasing because of the chairman's presence, whether or not all members were there or not. That was why we had put that the presence of the chairperson shall not increase the number of votes necessary to pass a particular matter unless all sitting members are present. So you wanted a scenario where the chairman could come in and ensure that business can get done properly and things can pass without affecting, the number of votes. Say if it's a 7-member committee, you need, 4 votes to pass it. If the chairman sits down, you need 5 votes to pass it. If there are 2 legislators missing and he's the only one there and one person is a no on a particular matter, the chair being at the meeting would then increase the number of votes needed and everything would fail. If someone's having a bad night, they could come in and do that. But if the entire committee's there, the chair shouldn't be able to come in and make an intentional tie. And that was the purpose of unless all sitting members are present being put there. I think that the process works fine and it has worked fine since 2008.
Legislator Heppner?
No, I'm good. Legislator Ronk. I've had back and forth on this, but Legislator Ronk convinced me.
I've had back and forth on it, depending on where I've been sitting, but I think all things considered, it's.
I've been on both sides of it.
Me too.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the times it doesn't even pair out to, majority or minority. It's more, it almost creates like a third party, a third caucus on certain issues.
The pizza party, you might say.
Yeah, the fourth, no offense, Legislator Parody. A fourth caucus. But Legislator Ronk has convinced me, so I'm happy to move on.
Okay. All right, so rule number 7, the rules for committees. I'm not going to read each subsection. Does anyone have any comments they want to begin with? Okay, I'll bring the one that's noted, and that's which has come up recently, that's to add the clarification on page 11 in terms of postponing to the next regular committee meeting for ways and means allowing the opportunity to postpone to the following month or the next committee meeting, which I think is prudent. Legislator Ronk.
Thanks. I understand the purpose of that, and I agree with it. I almost think that we should take it a step farther, perhaps, and allow a standing committee such as the health committee to postpone a resolution to a special meeting that they're going to have rather than require that every committee except for ways and means, because it has 2 committee meetings, have to postpone until the next month. I think that postponing to a special meeting is not necessarily a bad thing, especially if folks have questions. That would, you know, that would eliminate in some of our committees where we have to say, you know, I'll pass it to the floor, but I still have questions. We could say, I'd like to have a special meeting. I move we postpone until a special meeting to be determined by the majority members of the committee, and then be able to have questions answered before we actually vote on it.
Okay, Legislator Heppner?
Again, I totally agree with Legislator Ronk. I would just request that the specific language, just a note to council and the clerk, that ensures that any special meeting occurs you know, at a time, like, I don't want, this can't be like day of, you know, day of laws and rules, or day of, so like if they meet at 4 o'clock and laws and rules meets at 6 o'clock, then, you know, we only have, you know, X amount, you know, whatever, couple of minutes after work to read whatever might've been amended, for example. So I just ask some type of structure in there, that it has to, or the meeting has to occur before, if that, you know, if that legislation is happening either the day before session, or if it's going to laws and rules and ways and means, and it's a two committee piece of legislation, that it has to be prior to the day before either laws and rules or the day before ways and means.
Yeah, I would also say that the special, I mean, one, it needs to be obviously with the consent of the sponsor, but the special meeting, I would like to see it be a defined, I know we're not always able to define when the meeting is, but I would also want to ensure that wasn't a tactic to postpone to a special meeting and then the special meeting never gets scheduled, or it gets scheduled 6 months from then or whatever.
We could put a clause in that it automatically, if the meeting has to be held, it's automatically then postponed the following month.
Yeah, so we'll flag this to get language for postponing to a special meeting, and for allowing for the postponement to the next ways and mean meeting from the first one, if that's what's desired. Okay, rule 8 is advisory committees, commissions, and boards. That's charter language. Rule 9 is the organization of the legislature, chairperson, majority, and minority leaders. Legislator Ronk?
Yeah. We've had issues with this in the last several years. I want to flag it for discussion, and we're going to have to do some serious legal footwork with all of our attorneys. You know, I believe that several times in the 13 years I've been a legislator, we've tried to make this more clear and more functional. And right now, if you run as a Democrat, you're considered to be a Democrat as far as caucus goes. And if you serve as a Republican, you're, you know, assumed to be a Republican, is subsection E. And it says, for purposes of any mathematic calculation necessary, a legislator not enrolled in the political party composed of the highest two number of legislators may, within 30 days of taking office, declare themselves as a member of the majority or minority caucus by filing a document to that effect with the clerk of the legislature. I believe that the clerk has been, you know, just from a paperwork standpoint, accepting majority and minority leader designating petitions as a document filed with the clerk. For the purposes of Legislator Bartels, who's not enrolled in any political party, Legislator Wara, who's registered in the Conservative Party, in previous years, Legislator Joe Maloney, who was registered in the Independence Party. But I feel like we need a more concise process as it pertains to, you know, which caucus folks are choosing, because in the past we've had Democrats caucus with the Republicans. We've had people switch mid-year. You know, right now we have a legislator, Mr. Parody, who's, you know, not serving in either caucus. I just feel like we need to, I feel like this needs work. I'm not sure how to do it yet, but it definitely needs work.
Yeah. And as it's written right now, it's defining, for example, Legislator Parody as a member, as which party he's a member of in.
Correct.
in registration.
Loosely. And again, even that's not 100% clear.
But you're right. I think this does, this is going to need some deeper discussion.
Yeah, could I say something about this?
Absolutely. Thank you.
I mean, it's an ironic situation. Right now we have a caucus who has 12 members, and sometime around election day or the beginning of the year, two of those members were not enrolled in that party. We have another caucus that has 10 members, and two of them are not enrolled in that caucus. And then you got one other Yahoo that is enrolled in a party, but doesn't want to, it was in the pizza party, which sort of would indicate it a caucus of 10, 8, and possibly 5.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't seem to be too difficult. I doubt very much whether too many other people would join the pizza party, but the fact of the matter is it's precluded. Thank you.
It depends on if it's pizza night.
I can arrange that quickly.
Okay, so this will get a big flag, and we'll consult with all council on it as well.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No, thank you, Legislator Parody. Rule 10 is monthly and special meetings, notice, and rules of order. So we have monthly meetings, first part of the section. Comments? Okay, special meetings.
Yeah, I have one comment.
Yeah.
So in special meetings, I would, you know, think maybe we want to consider, you know, since, you know, we've experienced, you know, what we've experienced this year, a lot of times we talk about certain special meetings, especially like in terms of presentations and so on, you know, just to consider, you know, language that, you know, say like, for example, with the solid waste management plan, you know, that's a lot to kind of sit through and go through that PowerPoint protection while all the craziness of getting ready, you know, for votes and that session day. So why don't we consider allowing, you know, for a presentation like that to be done virtually? To where, so like on a, you know, a different night, we could have a presentation on the solid waste management plan, or we could have a budget presentation done, you know, via Zoom.
I think we could do that so long as the open meeting laws stay amended to allow for a quorum.
That's what my concern is. I don't imagine they stay, you know, the same.
Then we won't be allowed to. I mean, the minute. Yeah,
so that's that's my whole point is, should we consider, and, you know, the John Gravera's method of thinking ahead, you know, having that language, some type of stipulation in there that would allow us for that, so that, you know, we can do that, you know, even when, you know, the executive order is uplifted.
So basically, for a noticed public meeting via mm-hmm. Zoom for a special meeting.
Yeah.
We'll have to see when it's lifted if that would be allowed, because pre-COVID it wouldn't have been allowed to have a full video conference meeting.
I think that the biggest sticking point with that, like the biggest part of your of the executive order, is that you don't need to publish your remote attendance locations. So you might have the meeting location and all 23 of you with your different attendance addresses.
Gotcha. I was just trying to make all of
those. I think.
Yeah, and technically allowing access to the public at all of our different addresses. But I think it's a good point, Jonathan. And you know what? I think coming out of COVID, there may be many things that change. You know what I mean? As we like, it may be that when the executive order gets lifted, there'll be some changes even to open meetings law to allow for that, as we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's, you know, some people, you know, have to drive 45 minutes for a 25 minute presentation, you know.
Yep. May I ask one other question to legislator?
Absolutely, legislator.
I think the laws, the guidelines allow when there was a regular meeting before the pandemic where people could FaceTime in or Skype in.
Yes.
I don't think there may be a rule or a guideline that says how many times I may Skype in, but I don't know if there's a rule or a guideline that says how many of the 10 or 12 or 23 members are allowed to Skype in.
Well, I think in terms of the rule for how many times you can Skype in, that's an internal rule. That's correct. Rules, and it's two times. But I think Jay's right that if we were in pre-COVID right now and we decided to allow for everyone to video conference, I mean, right now the amount of times would apply. We'd have to change that, but we'd also have to notice all the meetings at all of our homes or wherever we were video conferencing.
And I would mean this as non-voting special meetings. I'm talking about sometimes,
yes.
Oftentimes they get pushed right before session or caucus night, but that would, you know, a non-voting nights, you know, things, you know, like a presentation like that where, you know, we're not just, you know, all sitting in a chamber for the purpose of sitting in a chamber.
I haven't seen anything that would preclude that by not with a specific.
Yeah, I specifically mean to avoid that situation where we always get into where all of a sudden we can't figure something out. We don't want to, you know, go through the, and then we just end up cramming a presentation or a Q&A with a consultant right before a caucus or a session.
I mean, I think, again, it'll depend on how the open meetings law looks when the restrictions get lifted, because if it looks as it did before, it has less to do with whether we're voting on something than whether or not we have a quorum, because we're conducting public business.
Gotcha.
With quorum. So I think we could probably do it in previous to COVID, we could probably do it, but with the caveats that Jay has brought up. Legislator Ronk?
I was going to say, I agree with Legislator Heppner. I definitely think that we could do it, you know, as long as there's no votes being taken. I would be comfortable with that, you know. And, you know, to Legislator Parity's point, as of right now in our rules, you know, as long as everyone doesn't do it 2 months in a row, I believe that we can have as many legislators Skype and or Zoom in as our resident tech expert Jay can handle.
It's two
non-consecutive. Two times and you can't do it consecutively.
Right, but two times total per year.
Yes, but you also can't do them both consecutively.
Right. Yeah, I mean I think open meetings law is going to apply to a quorum of the body. I see that, John, I haven't looked at it, but
yeah,
it's quorum of the body, whether or not we're voting. So we'd have to, my understanding is we, of it previous. Now it may get changed post COVID, and they may allow for this kind of thing, but I think it would still be considered an open meeting and would require notice and access to the public and access to the public to all of our homes. It would be in the pre-COVID, but I think it's worth looking into. And what I'm gonna do, and I'll talk to Jay about, is we can start now having the conversation with Committee on Open Government just to see what they're thinking and how and if they're anticipating any changes as we come out of this. So I think it's a good suggestion, especially considering we do try to cram those things into meetings. Okay, quorum, we just talked about video conference. There's a bunch of technical changes to video conference now that it's, when this was first passed, it was a very, very new technology. So if you look at number two, would propose striking everything past the first semicolon. The clerk of the legislature shall make arrangements for the video conferencing and get rid of all the rest of the stuff about funds and costs and paying.
That's all obsolete.
It's all obsolete, exactly. And in three, again, the first sentence is related to funds, so we can remove that. And number four, I think we can remove in its entirety, which is related to funds again. We'll renumber. Okay, D, chairperson to secure quorum. Such measures as required by law. Roll call, minutes, absence. Okay, stop me if there's something you want to discuss. Order of business, that's F. Decorum is G.
Trace?
Yes.
Something that has been brought up in the past that I think that we should have at least a discussion about is, you know, per se in Dutchess County, they have a period of public comment at the beginning of their meeting like we do, but on agenda items only. And then they have a period of public comment at the end of the meeting on non-agenda items. Meaning that if 50 people want to come and talk about something that has nothing to do with what's on our agenda, they actually have to wait through the people's business before doing so. I think that that's something that we should have a conversation about.
Okay, we'll put it on the list. You're right, we have brought it up multiple times. Okay.
And not to say that we're disallowing it, but we're just having it at the end of the meeting. So people who are there for agenda items on the agenda have the, you know, benefit of their time.
Okay, that's it's a good point. And we have periodically brought it up over time. So we'll make a note to include it. G is decorum. Comments. H is appeal from the chair's ruling. I, acting chair. J, privilege of the floor. K, member not to speak or leave his place. L, priority of business. M, limitation of time of speech. N, majority vote. Recording of vote. P, borrowing money. Q, vote on distinct propositions. R, when a member may be excused from voting. S, speaker to be recognized by chair. T, suspension of rules. U, presentation of motion. V, committee of the whole. W, withdrawal of resolution. X, motions not amendable or debatable. Y, previous question and amendments thereto. Z, motions for reconsideration. AA, motion to rescind. BB, all points not covered by this rule. And then we move to rule 11, clerk of the legislature duties. Making up the agenda. So the clerk put in a technical change on D. In making up the agenda, the clerk of the legislature, she changed, shall group items in the following order, unless otherwise directed by the legislature, should follow the order of, I don't mind the language, shall group items in the following order. But I'm wondering, in terms of the agenda, because it's the chair's agenda, and we saw that previously somewhere, it probably should be unless otherwise directed by the chair. Because the order of business under F on page 16, the order of business of each session shall be as follows, except the chairperson at his or her discretion may change the order of business. So I feel like it probably should be unless directed by the chairperson. Does anyone have an issue with that?
Hey, Tracy, this is Brian. Do you mind if I ask a quick question?
I totally don't mind. Go ahead, Brian.
So I'm looking at the at D there and unfinished business. I'm trying to think of when, and if someone could please give me an example of when that was used and how it would be used.
Go ahead, Legislator Wrong.
An example that would be if a resolution is postponed at the legislative meeting. That would then be unfinished business.
So it would be the previous legislative meeting?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And then that's it. I don't have any other comments on the clerks. I do have two outliers, but I'd rather just, does anyone else have any outliers right now that they want to, anything that hasn't been covered in here that they want to bring up? Okay. So the two, my two that aren't in here and in between now and when we get this down. One is censure. Legislator Ronk and I spoke about this. Since we defer to Robert's rules, I think that we should be specific about censure in our rules and what censure could be used for and how to use it. And then the other, on page 18, the excused from voting, which I forgot to bring up while we were there. I think we need to be more specific in our rules about how we use abstention versus recusal. When we talked about this at some point, when I was at the NYSAC meeting, spoke to an attorney there who advised us that we're using the wrong language when we abstain from a vote, that we should be recusing from a vote if it's due to a conflict, which is the reason that we're allowing our members to not cast a vote. And the rules of recusal are very specific. So I'd like to just work with counsel on some language for that as well.
I'm open to discussion.
Okay. All right, does anybody else have anything to add? We're pretty close to an hour.
A little bit over, Trace.
I know, 8 minutes.
One point, if you don't mind me bringing it up, you kind of skipped over it.
I don't mind you bringing up anything, go ahead.
It is, I believe, on page 12, number D, and that would be the a vacancy in a chairperson position.
Okay. On mine, that's 13, so I don't know what everybody's looking at, but okay, go ahead.
Basically, it says if we don't appoint or elect, choose a chairperson within 30 days, the county executive shall appoint a member. And I think we should have this clear, have a fallback in case we cannot come to a conclusion with a, say, an 11-11 tie.
It's a good catch.
In the 1800s, there was one year where it took like 2.5 weeks to elect a chairperson, and they had 175 votes or something like that.
I saw that in the book in the office. Voting and voting and voting and voting.
At one point, previous chairs of the legislature came to try and talk them into a compromise.
Yeah. Me and Ken talked about this at length back in 13, and the only thing we could come up with at the time was the word shall, meaning that we shall do it, but that doesn't mean we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if we were, and you're looking for some clarification in terms, or some
mechanism,
some further mechanism for us to ensure that we actually break the tie prior to it going to the executive, because in order to change the executive's authority, that would be a charter change and probably would be open to a referendum, because it arguably would change
the, it would be if we wait the 30 days and don't come up to a conclusion. But if we shall be able to pick someone within the 30 days, if we have a mechanism to pick that new chairperson, mm-hmm, then we don't have to change the 30 day.
Right. All right. So let's flag that to think through as well. We'll get our heads together on that one. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you all. I know this is riveting stuff, but we'll get through it. I appreciate everybody's input, and we'll collate all the information and the notes. Jay will get us a working document with people's comments, and we'll go from there.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you all for participating.
Go Yankees.
Oh, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I can't make
all in favor, aye. Good.
Aye. Have a great day. Be safe and stay healthy.